about the purpose of marriage, which is intimate fellowship, and the basic biblical or theological principles, which are covenant, the principle of the transcendent femininity and masculinity, the principle of the hierarchy, principle of stewardship, and the principle of grace. Now, it's all very nice to talk about those things. How do you make them work? How do you translate those principles into the day-by-day, everyday kind of living that it takes to make a marriage work? I just finished reading a book this week. It was written in 1850 or thereabouts. The thing almost fell apart while I was reading it. It actually was. And it was written by Peter Cartwright, who's an old was a Methodist circuit riding preacher in the end of the 1700s and early 1800s for over 50 years. As the frontier moved west, He rode the circuits. It's called the name of the book is autobiographical. His name is called The Backwoods Preacher, and he tells in one of the chapters of the book, he tells about this meeting he held with an old Dutchman. He calls and they call anybody who was of Northern Germany, a Scandinavian extract. They called him Dutchman back those days. And he said he had preached a sermon on that every believer had to take up his cross and bear it. And after the service, he sit around and talk for a while, and then head off down the road. And here was this old Dutchman. He had been in the service with his carrying his wife on his back. And he stopped him and asked him why he was carrying his wife on his back. And he said, "Well, you said, preacher, you're supposed to take up your cross and bear it, and she's it." She's such a scold. She's my greatest cross, and I must save my soul, is what he said. Well, is marriage really a cross to bear? For many, I fear it is. And that's very bad, isn't it? Marriage is a burden to be carried, a trial to be endured. We even make jokes about it. But it doesn't have to be that way, because God wants us to be happy. As I said last night, the principle of the modern value of personal happiness does not outvote the covenant. We start with the idea of a covenant. Marriage is a covenant, but God has joined together. And you see, Christians have a better reason than anybody else to make a marriage work. See, if you're not a Christian, you can have an open-ended contract. You know, as the old saying is, for better, for worse, but not for long. and the modern theory is, we'll just get married and try. It doesn't work, we'll get divorced. You know, it only costs $25 now. And try something else. We have no-fault insurance in Florida and no-fault marriages. And you know that? We really do. No-fault car insurance, no-fault marriage. I don't know what you have here. And so we'll get married. If it doesn't work, we'll just call it off and try again. Well, a Christian can't do that. And so we have to figure out ways to be happy. And so our marriage is not a cross to bear. But it's a celebration. It's a joy. And there's no such thing as a perfect marriage. I don't have one. You don't either. Dick says that he does, but Suzanne says they don't. And so you can make up your own mind on that. But And so we have to learn some of the secrets and skills of marriage. Now, I teach that marriage is a skill to be learned. I may not be right about that, but that's what I teach anyway. You see, we have some myths in our culture, and we have some myths in the church. One of our cultural myths is the myths we create by weddings. Now, I've had a lot of weddings. I don't have as many as most preachers. I never performed a wedding unless I was, after I learned better as a young preacher, unless I knew I was establishing a Christian home. It didn't make much sense to me to spend most of the week trying to create Christian homes through evangelism, and then at the wedding altar establish a non-Christian home. I didn't do that. But anyway, you know what a wedding is. It's unreality is what it is. I mean, she's never going to look that good again. I mean, right, $250 for my daughter just got married last June, my oldest daughter, and she put that dress on, I mean, she does. She looks good. And he is never going to, I mean, he's not going to look that good again until they bury him. I mean, probably not then. He has to rent a tuxedo because he doesn't own one. Why? He doesn't wear a tuxedo, so he rents one. Right? And we get them in a high state of emotion, in an artificial situation, and make them promise to stay that way the rest of their life. And it doesn't work. I threatened one time to write a wedding ceremony that really represented, has some connection with marriage. Theoretically, and I won't do this because I'm a coward, but that's when I get too old to care what anybody thinks about me, I'm going to write a wedding that has something to do with a marriage. You know, he's going to stand there in his old flannel shirt that she hates, and with a 2 days' growth of beard and B.O., and she's going to have some kind of strange contraption in her hair with Vic Salve, and I'm going to get two kids to cry through the whole wedding. And I'm going to have all four in-laws in the wedding. They're going to be in the marriage. Might as well be in the wedding. And I'm going to have her mother mad at him for something. I'm going to have a little flower girl, but she's not going to throw flowers. She's going to throw dirty underwear. They're going to walk on. I mean, when's the last time you walked on flower petals, right? And then on. You know, when I get through the whole wedding, I'm going to charge him $800 I didn't tell him about. Surprise him. Well, I'm just kidding you, of course. But we have this myth. We say, well, they love each other. They'll work everything out. Aren't they cute? Don't they look nice? Don't they love each other? Isn't that sweet? They'll work it out. No, they won't. They won't work it out unless they know how. You see, I've counseled couples who loved each other before, during, and after the divorce. Love wasn't a problem. They just couldn't work it out. Didn't know how to make it work. Now, and the Christian version of this myth is, well, if they love Christ and if they pray, their marriage will work. No, it won't. So we get this idea that out there in the world, all their marriages are unhappy, but here in the church, all our marriages are great. That's false. It's not true. You see, the baptismal waters through faith wash away sin. They do not take away ignorance. And if we don't know how to make it work, it isn't going to work. You see, Christianity does not give us a guarantee of a good home. You got that? Being a Christian is no guarantee of having a good home. All that Christianity gives us is a reason, a better reason than anybody else has for having a good home. And it gives us some principles if we'll learn them. So Christians have a better reason to make the home work, but they aren't. But if we do not learn the skills, the secrets and skills of married life, isn't going to work. I'm going to tell you some things this weekend. And I learned these. I'm going to tell you how I learned them. Some of them learned through experience. Some I learned through books. Some I got directly from heaven. If Paul Roberts can, why not me? Right? I'm just kidding. And whenever I present this, I have people been married 20 or 30 years say, I'm serious. They'll say, well, now I finally understand the old boy. I'm serious. You get people who have been married all these years and begin to figure each other out. So, while this is what I mean, that love is a great motive and Christianity is a great motive, and I believe that if we pray for wisdom, God will help us. That's one of the great promises in Scripture. I lived on that promise during 10 years, my first 10 years in the ministry. James chapter 1. If my Bible, if James chapter 1 had been cut out of my Bible, I never made it in the ministry. If any man lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, gives to all men liberally, and upbraideth not. So I think if we pray, God will give us wisdom. I believe that very much. And if anything calls for wisdom, it's married life. Family life calls for wisdom. And so we come to secrets and skills. By that I mean, what are some of the things we need to know to build upon these sound biblical principles that I talked about last night? Now, the first thing, I want to focus on the principle of grace. I believe very much in grace. And what grace means, and by the way, the Bible teaches very clearly that our relationship to God is as of grace. And therefore, our relationship with each other must be based on grace. The biblical statement is, as God has forgiven us, so we must forgive one another. And one of the big mistakes Christians try to make is they want grace when they're looking at God, but they want law when they're looking at their neighbor. And you cannot do that. God has made it very clear to us. For instance, even in the what we call the Lord's Prayer, which is the model prayer. Forgive us our trespasses, even as what? We forgive those who trespass against us. And the Bible has Jesus in the story of the unjust judge, you recall? In the story of the servant who was forgiven much but would forgive nothing himself. And in many other teachings, Jesus made it very clear that we cannot demand live by law with one another and expect grace from him. We got to choose right now. It's either all law or all grace. And if you live with me by law, you and I are going to get along very well because I'm not good enough to live by law. I need grace, and so do you. So is my wife. So do my kids. Now, grace means operate that with our mates. When I look at my wife, I've got a decision to make. Am I going to operate from the starting point of my rights, or am I going to operate from the starting point of her needs? There's a decision. What is going to govern my attitudes? Am I going to say, well, now what are my rights, or am I going to ask the question, what are your needs? You can't do both. And I just promise you this. You want to have a miserable home, you just get in the rights business. And I promise you, your home isn't going to work. So the question is not what I need, but what do you need? That's grace. You got that? Operate from the point of view of, that's how God, why God saved us. God had a right to send us to hell, but we had a need to be forgiven. And so the cross was his response to, where he reconciled his rights and our needs. It cost him his son. And husbands ought to love their wives as Christ loved the church, which means it's going to cost us something, fellows and ladies. It's going to cost us self, the death of self. And so it doesn't matter what my rights are. The question is, what are my wife's needs? And the other way. You understand that? That's the principle. Which means that I try to deal with her from her point of view. Now, that's the principle. How does this work? Well, I want to come now to a great secret. You ready? This is a great secret, and it's this, that the men and women are different. Like I said last night, I'm not talking about plumbing. I mean, men and women are really different. Men and women are more different than men and women know that they are different. And so the way we learn the secret and create the skills to build upon the principle of grace is that I need to learn how my wife is different so that I can operate with her in my relationship with her from her point of view, not my point of view. And most women, not because they aren't well motivated, but most women relate to their husbands psychologically, if I can use that term. Most women relate to their husbands as if they were other men, or other women, I mean. And men relate to their wives as if they were other men. It causes a great deal of harm in marriages. Not because people are evil, because they don't know any better. Take it from me. Most of what I'm teaching you, I learned the hard way. You got that? Most women relate to their husbands as if they were other women. And men as if their wives were other men. But you can't do that. Men and women are different. I'm going to talk about this afternoon some of the ways they're different. The first way is this. That men operate, and I'll give you the words, and you probably know what they mean, but I'll explain exactly how I'm using them. Men operate atomistically, and women operate holistically. They simply operate differently. By that I mean women. Now, by the way, what I'm saying, what I'm giving you are generalities. It's not true of all women, not true of all men. It's true of most women. It's true of most men. And it's true in different degrees, understand? It's more true of some men than other men more true of some women than other women. So if I don't hit you, then you're probably right. You understand? These are generalities. It's true in different degrees, but it's generally true about most men, generally true about most women to different degrees. The women operate holistically. That is, a woman's life does. If you want to picture it as a chain, a woman's life is like a chain where all the links are intermeshed and to form a net, so that every part of a woman's life is hooked on to every other part of her life. And what happens in one part of a woman's life deeply affects how she feels in another part of her life. Or to switch my metaphors, I had an old friend who was in the Navy during the Second World War, and he said they had an ironclad rule on board ship that you could not go through one bulkhead, one door, until you could not open this one until you closed the one behind you. As the case they got torpedoed, the thing wouldn't sink, you know. You had to close this door behind you, then you could open the door in front of you. And a man can operate atomistically. It's like, again, the first metaphor, the chains in a man's life aren't even linked together at all. A man can compartmentalize his life, and a woman can't. And most men don't know that about their wives, and most women don't know that about their husbands. And what happens in one part of a man's life, he is more able than his wife to sort of shut the door and operate pretty well another part of his life. It creates a great deal of a heartbreak and misunderstanding in homes. So men atomistically, women holistically. Now, our principle of grace says to me that I must operate from my wife realizing that she operates the way she does, that she's holistically oriented, and I must operate from her point of view. That's grace. Now, what does this mean? Well, I'll give some practical areas of application. You see, most fellows don't know. Do you ever have a fight with your wife, fellows? And not a big fight, a little spat. So you slam the door on the way out to work. You know, no big deal, just a little set to. And come home at night, and of course by 11 o'clock you've forgotten all about it. And by 3 o'clock you're happy as a clam. You come home at night and you say, "Hi, honey." And she starts right in the middle of the sentence that you slammed the door on that morning. And she'll just pick up right where you left off. You see, she hadn't forgotten a thing. Now, the reason, I'll tell you why that, and he'll say, "Are you still mad about that little old thing? You still griping? What kind of person are you? Hateful, unforgiving," he's thinking. He may not say it. If he's smart, he won't. She's hateful and unforgiving. She's still mad after. He's not mad. Why? And you know what she's thinking? She's not saying it either. She's saying, "Boy, he is sure insensitive, unfeeling." No, he's a man. She's a woman. He's closed doors in his life. He closed some doors in his mind. By the time he got halfway to work, he had a couple of doors closed, and he had a good day, but she didn't. You see, what happens to a man at 9 o'clock in the morning doesn't necessarily affect how he's going to operate at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It's not too important. But a woman, she doesn't have any doors to close, and she wishes she did. And so, and a woman can't really close the door at all unless it's resolved. You know that? Here's how a man operates. A man can think things through logically, explain them to himself, and close the door on it. If a man has a problem, here's what he'll do. He'll think through the worst case scenario, what's the worst that can happen, the possibilities, and if nothing can be done about it, he'll say, "Well, nothing can be done about it," and he'll close the door pretty much and operate pretty well. He'd go on with life. Just go on. And a woman, if she's hurting about something, she'll think it out, and she may even admit to herself that nothing can be done about it. It's not going to be changed, but it doesn't help her one bit. She's still miserable. Phil, did you ever win an argument with your wife that you lost? that you won logically, but somehow you didn't win? You had all the facts, but it didn't make any difference? You see, here's how a man deals with a problem. You ready? A man, if he has a problem, he won't go find somebody to talk it over with. He'll work it out in his own mind, and once it's worked out, it's either solved or not solved, but he gets on with his life. But a woman can't do that. And he doesn't know that she can't do that. And a woman struggles with this. Because, you see, if a woman has a problem, she needs it resolved in some way, or she needs somebody to care that she's hurting. But good, I'll come back to that point in just a moment. I don't want to mix two things up here. But women operate holistically. Fellas, what you say to your wife on Monday morning is going to directly affect how she feels about you on Thursday night. You may not remember what you said on Monday morning. Be careful what you say to your wife, especially if it's bad. Now, if it's good, somehow the rule is broken. You can tell her you love her 10 times today, and during the night she leaks. I mean, it all runs away somewhere, and you start at goal the next day. But you can tell her something bad in April. It's still with her in February. One of the things I picked up on this. I worked my way through undergraduate school working on the freight docks, in Cincinnati. And on those docks were some of the roughest men. I mean, I worked with men who could cuss you out in four languages, and did regularly. Rough men. And I've seen men on the docks almost come to blows at 11 o'clock in the morning, and at 5 o'clock when they checked out, go out and have a beer together. I've seen women in the office getting an argument in the morning, and the next April they're still fighting. Yeah. 2 years later, they're still mad at each other. It goes on and on. Why? Because women just have a tough time dealing with unresolved things. They just can't, they don't have doors to close. And let me illustrate it this way. More things get tied together for a woman. A man, he goes out and buys a new Chevrolet Camaro, and he says to his wife, "Honey, we got 48 payments to go. And try to not get it banged up right away. You know, we don't get a new car very often, or a motor scooter, whatever." So she does pretty good for a couple of weeks, and then it gets a little bit careless and gets a scratch on the door, not a very big scratch. And boy, he comes home and sees it, and the fight is on. And he's really, and he lets her have it. I don't ask much, you know, and. The least you could do, you know, these cliches, and he's really letting her have it over the car door. Now, what she doesn't realize is that he's a man, and he loves her dearly. In fact, in a couple, 3 hours, when they go to bed, he's gonna be interested in some affection. He's got plans for later on in the evening. He'd die for her, but he's really mad about that door. And so he's letting her have it, but that's all he's, you understand? All he's talking about is that door, the car door. He's not talking about the relationship. He's crazy about her. He's just mad about the door. But that's not what she's hearing. You know what she's hearing? He obviously loves that car more than he does me. Our marriage must be in real trouble if a little scratch on the door can do this to it. If he gets that mad, something's really wrong with you. You got what I'm saying? He's talking about the car door, and she's talking about the relationship. And if she's a young wife, she may even say it. She'll say, "Well, obviously, if you love me, you wouldn't be talking like this." And he didn't have the foggiest notion of what she's talking about. You understand? He's not talking about whether he loves her or not. Of course he loves her. He loves her dearly. Has nothing, you understand? It has nothing to do with what's going on in his mind. And so she needs to know that he can be mad about one thing about her, and one thing she did, and love her passionately, and every other, you know? That he's just mad about that one thing, and in an hour or two he'll be over it. And then he's going to wonder why she's not over it. You see, he's just had a little spat about a car door, and she's gone through a crisis about their marriage. Because she doesn't know that's a man talking to her. It's like it's another woman. And you get what I'm saying? She needs to realize that he can be really upset about one thing, and that's it. But he needs to realize, and you need to realize this, fellas, that your wife ties everything together. And a woman's ability to respond to her husband in every way is directly tied to how you see in the sexual relationship. And I don't want to get too specific, but in the sexual relationship, this really comes to bear. See, a woman's ability to respond to her husband depends upon their total relationship. You see, a man, he can have 4 or 5 days when he's really busy and doesn't have much time to spend with his wife. And he cannot say 10 words to her other than just conducting business, you know. And be very much in love with her. But he's working on this now, and then he's done with that. He's working on this, and it's Wednesday afternoon. He's getting this project done, but he's got something scheduled for Thursday morning, and then Thursday afternoon he has got these 3 appointments, and then comes Friday morning, and he hasn't said boo to his wife hardly, you know, just say howdy and go on all the way. And so he's done with that. And then it comes Friday night, and it's 11 o'clock, and now he's ready for her. Got that? He's gone through this and this, and now he's ready for her. And she's not ready for him. Why? Because she'll say, well, now I have your attention. All you're interested in is sex. Why? You don't really love me. Well, you haven't talked to me all week. And she'll say some very dirty things to him sometimes, which is not true. And he will say to her, well, you're cold and unresponsive. You know, he says he thinks she's cold and she thinks he's unfeeling. Not true at all, usually. Well, you don't have a bad marriage, you've got bad communication. You see, she doesn't have any concept of him loving her all the while he hasn't paid any attention to her from her point of view. He doesn't know what she's talking about. See, he doesn't know that her ability, not her willingness, not her desire, but her ability to respond to him on Friday night depends upon how he treated her all week. Because it's all tied together. You see, when you ask a man about sex, he'll think about what happens in bed. If you ask a woman about sex, she'll think about their total relationship. She'll think about how he treated her at supper Tuesday. She'll think about, did he take time out to take a little walk with me on Wednesday? And see what I'm saying? It's all tied to, it's a very general thing for a woman, a very specific thing for a man. And so what do we do? Well, the rule is, the principle of grace teaches us that in all these things, we meet as near to the middle as we can, as often as we can. Men are not going to become women, and women are not going to become men. And we're always going to have areas of bad communications. There is always be a difference. And as the French say, vive la différence. The difference is great. But we try to meet as near the middle as we can, as often as we can. Which means, in this case, for instance, a woman must be more patient and a man must be more sensitive. A woman must realize that he really can be real busy all week and not pay any direct attention to her and love her dearly. The fact, you see, a woman interprets, if a man more or less ignores his wife all week because he's busy, she interprets that as he doesn't really care about me. And that's not necessarily true, you understand? She has no conception that a man can really care about her and not pay continuing attention to her. But he can, ladies. He can. And a man needs to realize that she has no conception of that. And he needs to be sensitive to the fact that he's married to a woman, not to another man. And he needs to give attention to her. I'm very serious. He needs to call her up on Thursday morning and say, hey, how are you? I got 10 minutes off here at work and I'm on my break. I just got to thinking how lucky I am to have you. Thought I'd call you up and tell you. See you later. You'll see him later, all right. A woman needs to know, fellas, that you're thinking about her all the time. And a woman needs to realize that a husband really can be thinking about her, very in love. Does that make sense to you? It's a matter of this very thing I'm talking about. Now, another area of difference which I suggested is, and this is, don't misunderstand this. And when I say men and women are different, I am not saying that one way is smart and the other is silly. One is good, one is bad. No, just different. And it's very true, it's very important when it comes to this matter of what I'm going to talk about now. men tend to operate more by logic. Women tend to operate more by emotions. In life, a good marriage needs both. I'm not saying that women are silly. As a matter of fact, women very often come to the truth much quicker than men do by the path of logic, especially in personal problems. Women are, if you've got a problem that involves people, a woman will figure out what's going on a week before her man does. Or maybe he never will. But he's being very logical about it. So I'm not saying that one is smart and one is stupid. I'm simply saying that men tend to operate more by logic, women by emotion, although women do use logic and men do use emotion. For instance, I learned this the hard way. I was in the local ministry, and my wife, she would tell me, well, something's wrong with somebody. She had named them. And I'd say, no, that doesn't make any sense. I was with them 2 hours, didn't talk with them, discussed it with them. There's no problem. She said, you'll find out. And 2 weeks later, or 2 months later, I found out. She was never wrong. Women read people better than men do, and it's spooky to men. My wife, she can judge what it takes me 3 months to find out about a person, she finds out in 3 minutes. If my wife says a person is a certain kind of person, I've learned to listen to her. She's never been wrong. And I don't know how she knows. It's not logical, but it's almost always true. They pick up on things. They know. For instance, women, if a marriage is in trouble, a woman knows it 3 years before the man does. A lot of men have come home for lunch and found a note on the kitchen table, goodbye, honey, I'll never see you again. And he didn't even know there was a problem. Because he thought it about logically. And it comes to solving, again, this thing. Remember I asked the question, fellas, did you ever win an argument that you lost? Here's how this comes out, especially young marriages. Something will happen that really hurts a wife. She's upset. And what he'll do is he'll explain everything to her the way he explains everything to himself. You know, he may even get out of blackboard. I used to do this. He almost get out of blackboard. Now, let me outline this problem for us, you know. And I'd say, now, here are the problems, you know, and there's three possibilities with subpoints that can be done, you know. And I'd say, honey, you can see that there's nothing. We only got one choice to make, and we have to do this, and this is what it's going to have to be. You see that, don't you? You know, unassailable logic, yes. You know. And then an hour later, she's still unhappy about it. And then he'll start this business. Well, honey, you're being silly. I thought we talked this out. I thought we understood. Was it logical? Yes. You see, he's operating in regard to his wife as if she were another man. That's what a man does with himself. He explains it to himself. Once it's all explained, worked out, all the ducks in a row, he can live with it. He can't figure out why she sometimes can't. The reason is she's a woman, which makes her sensitive to people, you understand? Makes her, one of the things that makes her that way. I'll give you a little illustration of this. I'll try to be practical. My wife is one of the wisest people I know, but she's not always the most logical. Sometimes I'm logical and she's right. But sometimes I'm right. You need both, you understand? There's a time. For instance, here's a young couple on a tight budget, but they need a night out, need some romance, but they can't afford it. What do you do? Well, sometimes a man can go through it logically and say, honey, we can't afford it. Here are the figures. Math doesn't lie, so we can't do it. Well, okay, sometimes you have to do it. If you don't have that kind of thinking, sometimes you go broke. You have to be careful, don't you, financially. But sometimes you need to say, well, it's true we can't afford it, but let's do it anyway. We'll figure out how to pay for it later. Why? Because right now we need a good marriage. We need a good evening together more than we need good math. You understand? We need an unbroken relationship better than we need a sound budget. You see the difference? Sometimes you need to go one way, and especially to raising kids. Sometimes you need the father there to straighten everything out logically, but sometimes you need the mother to come in and say, okay, now, let's handle it this way. And he needs to listen. Sometimes he needs to listen to her, and sometimes she needs to listen to him. Do you see that? You need both. In a good marriage, I think you have the proper blending of emotion and logic. If you just have all logic, you can have a nice legal system. That's good for the military. You know, that's good. Everything's logical in the military. But you see, raising kids is not the same thing as training recruits. And I'll give you an illustration of this. About 3 or 4 years ago, we had some remodeling done in our house. My wife can't stand clutter, dust. She's not a fastidious housekeeper, but she's a very neat housekeeper, and she likes things in order. And I knew she was going to have a hard time of it. And because we're going to have plaster dust, which is very bad in the house, we have to knock out a door, and we're going to knock out a window, put a door in, and it's going to be a mess for a while. It has some carpet laid. And I said to her, I could just see her coming. I could see the clouds coming. She was dreading it. About a week and a half of living in the middle of a clutter, which is really hard on her. And so I explained to her twice, as I recall. Now, honey, you realize, don't you, there's no way we can have the remodeling job done without the mess. Yes, it's very logical, understand? See, what I did, I don't like mess either, but since I'm being a man, I understand you got to have the mess to have the house look the way you want it to look. I was happy as a clam. I can live with the mess. It didn't bother me, besides I wasn't there all day. And but I could see that she was, so I explained it to her twice. You understand, honey? Yeah. Because she was saying little things like, oh, it's going to be such a mess. I hope nobody comes over. And this kind of thing. And so when the day came, when the workers showed up, I had learned. You see, in the old days, what I would have said is, when she got the blues and to get a little bit snippy and gripey and unhappy when the house was a mess, I'd have said, honey, you're being silly. I thought you understood. Which really would have helped the situation a lot. That would have just done wonders for my wife. No, I learned. I'm serious. I'm not very bright, but I learned after about the fifth time around. And so the day when the workers showed up and they tore everything out and it was a big mess, I sent her a dozen roses. And I had a note on it that said, honey, I know this is hard for you. It's the stupidest thing I ever did. From my point of view, you can't smell roses. 3 days later, they're dead. And we could have spent the money on something else. I could have bought 3 pair of socks. That's how a man thinks. Right? That's how a man thinks. But, you see, I learned that what my wife needed, she didn't need another explanation of how that she was being silly. She didn't need me to explain that we had to put up with the mess for a few days. What she needed was someone to care that she was hurting. That's what she needed. See, I could explain it to myself and live with it. I'm very logical. I teach logic, as a matter of fact. But I've learned over the years I'm married to a woman, not to another man. You got that? And that helped her. You understand? She still was unhappy with it, but it helped her because every time she'd walk by the coffee table, there'd be those roses with that note saying, honey, I know this is hard for you. And she knew that somebody cared, and it helped her get through that. That's called dealing with a woman from her point of view. And I'll just share that with you. Now, I'll tell you all the times that I did right. I'm not going to tell you about all the times I did wrong. Do you see the point? That's called grace. Now, women need to, and my wife practices grace much more than I do. Most of what I know about raising, having a good home, I learned from her. But women need to do this. For instance, a man needs to deal with a woman from her point of view. That is emotion sometimes. That's pure emotion. See, it made her feel better, but it doesn't make any sense to me. It wouldn't make me feel better. She just sent me a jar of aftershave lotion and say, honey, I know this. I know you don't like the clutter. I'd have thought she was nuts. You know, I'd have probated the old girl if she'd have done that for me. But so it didn't make any sense to me. But a woman needs to extend grace too. For instance, a woman needs to realize that if ladies, sometimes you drive your husband crazy. Do you realize it's hard for a man to operate in a situation that doesn't make sense to him? Do you know how hard it is for your man to do something that he thinks is unreasonable? It's very hard on a man. He genuinely suffers. When he's explained to you 6 times why this is the way it has to be, and you're still upset. And he doesn't know what else to do. And so sometimes you need to be, you understand? We need to meet as near to the middle as we can, as often as we can. This is a great principle. By the way, I'll add parenthetically. You ever heard of a 50-50 marriage? That's sort of a unisex marriage. You know, everybody's equal. I don't believe in that. The Bible says the husband has the house. When I got married, I thought, well, honey, we'll have a 90-10 marriage. That'll be a good balance. I'm 90, you're 10. 3 days after the wedding, we were down to 51-49. I had a bare majority. I was hanging on, you know. But I don't believe in 50-50 marriages. I don't believe in 90-10 marriage. I don't even believe in 51-49. I believe in 85-85. He gives 85% and she gives 85%. And you live on what slops over in the middle. That's called grace. You got that? What slops over in the middle is what you build your marriage on. And so we need to meet in the middle. You understand? I need to send my wife the rose, but she needs to back off sometimes and say and realize that she's driving me crazy because she won't let it drop. You know, that, something like that tears a man up. You know, here's something that's a problem has come up and it's been dealt with the best you can. And he's ready to drop it and go on. So he closed the door and move on. He's reasoned it out logically. And she's still carrying it around. Still bringing it up. And he'll say to her, honey, how long are you going to keep on with this? I thought we talked this out. I thought you understood. And he's going nuts. So sometimes, ladies, you need to operate from his point of view if you can. Does this make sense to you? See, it's men and women are different. And grace teaches us that we, as much as we can, and we can't do it completely, we try to operate from the other person's point of view. Let's take about a 10-minute break, 15 minutes, have some coffee, and then we'll start again.